Welcome to Radio Gorgeous. On the Radio Gorgeous sofa with me is Alyssa Warren. Welcome, Alyssa Warren, to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are the author of Not the Only Sky.
Yes.
A book I loved, and if I'm puffy-eyed today, it's because I just finished it this afternoon before you came, and I was sobbing.
Oh,
I had to clutch onto my husband and boo-hoo for a little bit.
Thank you.
Happy tears, obviously. Bittersweet happy tears, I think. Yeah?
Good. Good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yes, I really loved it. It had, if I can compare it to the feeling, because there is, you get immersed in the world that you create, and it's a world largely peopled by women. And it has the quality. What was that book? The Secret of Keeping Bees,
or something? Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
There's, especially because there's an older woman and older women involved, and it's something that's, I don't know, the wisdom of older women or the folly of older women.
It's a mix, I think.
Yes, exactly. Is something I aspire to, I guess.
Same.
We'll get there eventually.
Exactly.
But with that babbling start, could, in your words, give us the story as much as you want to reveal of Not the Only Sky?
Well, it started out as a coming-of-age story about a 25-year-old artist living in New York who was traveling in Morocco, strangely enough. And she was kind of an odd character, and I thought, I need to explain her. So I started with these flashbacks, which became Tiny Mite. That was who that character was as a young girl. And Bee and Lovey and all these people started kind of chatting in my head. And before I knew it, the flashback had became 175 pages. And so I ended up with a 600-page manuscript because I was still trying to hold it all together. So I guess I'm jumping ahead here. This is part of why it took so long to finish the book, was to let go of basically almost 200 pages of the book. So then the decision...
Well, the sequel, as far as I'm concerned.
There you go. Maybe I'll go back to New York. But yeah, so I just, in the end, decided to let Big Ben take over.
Okay, so it's told through various voices. Introduce the characters, Tiny Mite, Velvet, Lovey, and Bee.
And Bee. Okay, so Tiny Mite is an 8-year-old girl, and she has a very troubled mother, who's Velvet. You know, kind of the former beauty queen of the town. Things haven't gone her way, so she's trying to figure out what her future is going to be. And then we have Velvet's mother, who's Bee, and her twin sister, Lovey. And they've both taken some pretty heavy blows in their life, so they live together. They're very different, but incredibly close as well. And so, yeah, it is a big, crazy, wacky farmhouse full of women. Yep.
Yes. And because Lovey and Bee grew up in and around that farmhouse with their relatives, their German relatives, the boom and bust of farming, and that whole wide open Midwest where there's nothing but what you make and find. Their story is so known to each other and understood by each other that they almost forgot to talk.
That's an interesting
because
point,
there's so much that's misunderstood and unsaid and unsayable, and you know, it's this crazy household where everybody, all three generations, are looking for a vanishing point.
They are, yeah.
Lovey and Bee are looking to the apocalypse, you know, and trying to track and date the apocalypse as a sort of way of making now okay. Velvet is looking for escape as a way of making now in the past okay. And Tiny Mite, you know, as she becomes Clea, looks to do the same.
Yeah, she's very much trying to figure out this adult world where there's so many. I mean, what you know, as a writer, I mean, what's so fascinating are all the unspoken rules, mm-hmm. and how the ones we get. I mean, we know, or and kids know, don't they? They know what the score is, whether it's said or you know spoken out loud or not. And so I just thought, yeah, it'd be fun to kind of explore that. But yeah, but she has this quirky imagination that filters all of it. So
yeah, she is such a wonderful heroine. And as a kid, you know, she's like the little girl in Little Miss Sunshine. She's like the, you know, Donna Tartt's character in The Little Friend.
Oh,
was like one of my favorite heroines.
Thank you. Likewise.
Yeah. So she really has that quirky, funny quality of this kid who's, for her mother, hard to know.
Yes. Yeah, that's, they're such different people. Mm-hmm. I mean, their personalities couldn't be more different. So that's part of the clash there between mother and daughter. Mm-hmm. That's a bit tragic.
Yeah, but it also sets that, for me, there were so many cycles explored in the book. Something that, you know, I'm always interested in seeing it myself as a mother, as a daughter, you know, the cycles of even just being quirky and whatever. Well, that skipped over Velvet and is revisited in a way in Tiny Mite.
Yes. Yes. Very much so. Yeah.
Yeah. And also the cycle of the maybes. Tell me about maybe and the role of maybe in the books.
Oh, gosh.
Because for Velvet, maybe's big with Bud and then big with Trent.
Yes, it is. Yeah, maybe's big for Velvet. You know, like you said, everyone's looking toward a different vanishing point. And yeah, I think, I don't know. Velvet is a character who just needs a lot of possibilities in her life. But she lives in a town that's shrinking. So it's like the whole energy of the place is antithetical to what she needs to feel alive and hopeful. And I think her big ally in that is obviously her father. And yeah, and I was also wanted to explain how the whole thing with Trent Wayne came about. Because you're like, how would this come about? And that was the bonding point between the two of them for sure, is this traveler who's out going, well, maybe I'll do this, maybe I'll do that. And
a dreamer.
Yeah, it is. I think maybe exactly. It's just that's what that's all about, is dreaming.
Dreaming. And you had a wonderful, because it came very closely in the book, and I'm just finding it now. I think sometimes maybe became a trap.
Yes.
You know, maybe this and maybe that, and you know, but it's also the dreaming and the maybe stops you from doing now.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Like the maybe and the it's exciting on one hand. On the other hand, maybe it sets the bar a bit too high, you know, and keeps a person from making choices, moving ahead, stepping forward. And then when you add that to the fact that Velvet's impulsive, you know, yeah, she's.
And it's a wonderful exploration of forgiveness and trying to find forgiveness in oneself and forgiveness in others in order to move on.
Yeah, that's a huge, huge theme. And I think it's a difficult one. And gosh, now that you bring it up, it's a question that I've been at this phase of my life. I have a lot of friends and we've all gone through a lot of very different, but you know, you go through a lot, don't you, by the time you hit 45. And that question has come up a lot. What is forgiveness? How do you forgive? And I don't know. I don't think the answer is a neat and tidy thing. And I think people forgive differently. So I kind of wanted to explore the difference between how Clea sees it, how for B, you know, it's different for her as well.
That was interesting because B, as a mother, can't imagine not forgiving her daughter.
Yes. Yeah, it's automatic.
Yeah.
I mean, she'll wait 10 years and yeah, I thought about that a lot, and that actually frustrates, you know, some of the other characters who just don't get it.
Yeah.
Like, how is that even possible?
Yeah. You had a beautiful description of her not wanting to, you know, the tenuous connection that she does have with her daughter. The postcards are seen as sort of a spider's thread, and she'd rather not even pluck at them, because to tug too hard might break them, might snap that connection, which she dare not do.
Yeah, yeah. It would be just too much of a loss. It's yeah. too great.
Yeah, just even the idea of that loss is too terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the misunderstandings that people have is unbelievable, but so real. And it's also, half the time you just want to shake people. Just in my own life, people you see just want to shake people. Could you just talk to each other? Like, this would so easily be solved without everyone's stupid assumptions that they know everything.
Yeah, no. Oh, I know. There's so many. We all see things out of it through a very different filters, don't we? So
yes,
helps drive a plot forward.
Let's exactly. Because everything is what you imbue it with.
Yeah,
and seen through the colored filter.
Yeah, and all of your life experience that you've been through already. So
another cycle that you touch upon in this, which is something I think we need to examine more fully, openly, and honestly, is that cycle of victimhood and how the cloak of victimhood allows you to be blind to your victimizing, or allows you to justify and further perpetrate being a victimizer yourself.
Yes, yes. Yeah, no, that the moment that's coming up in my mind right now is that moment where Clea picks up the rock. I don't know if you remember what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And she throws it, and it's just like comes to her. Yeah, like actually what you get out of victim, you know, being in a state of victimhood, it's actually, it can trap a person.
Yeah. Yeah. Traps you in a cycle. Mm-hmm. Tell me about, you said to me before we started this, that it took you a long time to write this book. Why?
It did.
One,
10 years.
Writing two books.
Yes. Well, this is it. I was, struggling with this gigantic manuscript, trying to make it all work. Trying to, you know, hold it all together. And then just life. I have three boys who are ages 9 months to 13.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're busy.
I'm very busy. I mean, all parents are. But it is challenging. Yeah. Like, entertain, you know, there's just these big gaps between the kids. And we just had some just different life crises that popped up. And so I've just been working on it bit by bit by bit. And here we are, finally, thank goodness.
Exactly.
It's such a relief, I can't tell you.
But, and how did you come to writing? Because I think you're an artist as well.
I am, yeah. So I studied English, and I went to Ecuador with my Ecuadorian husband many years ago, and I was teaching a modern British lit class. I had just finished a master's degree in Sydney, Australia, and I was thinking like to be on more of an academic track. That was my plan.
The safe plan.
Yes, exactly. It's like, okay, that's exactly. And they just lost their creative writing professor, you know, and so it felt very uncomfortable to me because I had planned to go to graduate school. All my courses were I didn't take creative writing as an undergrad. So I thought, my gosh, I can't do this. And they said, of course you can. You know, it's just for a semester or a year max until, you know, we find another person. Just go for it. And I thought, okay, well, we can talk about great writing, great literature. That's kind of what we focused on. And I started writing along with my students. That's what happened. So that's what got me going. I mean, I just had such a great time. It was such a great class. And I've been writing since. Just
wow.
A little bit here, a little bit there. Yeah.
So you have your students to thank.
I know. I do. I do. I know. My brother-in-law actually married one of my students. And I thought, oh my gosh, I hope I gave her A's. I couldn't remember. But yeah, so it was.
Don't blame me.
It was
don't
a good...
thank me. Sorry. Whatever.
So yeah, that was where
I got
going. And
what was your path to London?
My path to London was from San Francisco, 99. My husband was working for a tech company, And I had traveled in London as a student and always loved it. So when the opportunity came up to come over here, when we thought it would just be like a 2 or 3 year, you know, the classic expat visa, we thought, cool, let's go over. It'll be a fun couple of years. So we lived here for, 3 years. And then we went back. I mean, I've moved a lot. We went back to the States, actually. And then another opportunity came up. And then we came back. So total, we've been here, 12 or 13 years. And
wow.
Yeah, are here indefinitely now at this point. So
okay, so, And getting back to your writing, has that first 200 pages, has that turned into anything? Has that, where are you now?
Yeah, well, I didn't just, hit delete, it's just, a separate file somewhere. I don't know. It's funny. Once I kind of let that part go, and then I developed the second half of the book, part 2 and 3.
Yeah.
That first character started to feel separate. So if I kind of develop that material again, I almost feel like it's a different character. Mm. Yeah, although at this point I've kind of started writing something that's set in South America. So So, but you just never know, I might.
She was born to give birth to tiny mice.
I guess so. Exactly. It's all about tiny mice.
Exactly. Well, let's talk. I did want to get back to the book and talk a little bit about the structure of the book. Because that also, it was a, like The Vanishing Points, it was a going forward to go backwards to go forward kind of thing. Tell me a little bit about the structure of the book.
Yeah, that whole backward narrative was added last, basically. I was actually really inspired by another writer named Evie Wilde. She wrote a book called All the Birds Singing, and she has this great backward narrative. And so I just happened to be reading at the time that I was trying to solve a problem, which is to get more of, Velvet. Like, what's going on when she's in that car, But I hadn't tapped into any of that at that point. And so, and she's very confused. So I thought it's okay if the reader is, I kind of wanted the reader to experience a bit of, mm-hmm. of what she's going through, that it's all chaotic and
it
confusing.
Was interesting because Velvet, because we were talking about how different Velvet and Tiny Mite are from each other. And then I look at this line of women, Bee, the grandmother, who is wacky as the day is long, but has made her wackiness, she has her own vision of her life. She has her own vision of her marriage. She has her own vision of the apocalypse and God and creation and what's, and she has made that work in this small town. She has that's a seamless incorporation.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas for Velvet, she is much more of, especially as a young woman, a conventional, it's a cheerleader, prom, homecoming queen, the pretty girl in high school, the prettiest girl, the hometown girl.
Yeah.
And she can't make herself different in town.
Mm.
She has to leave in order to do that. Whereas Tiny Mite is even more wackadoo than her grandmother, but she makes it work there. She's able to differentiate herself, and she has, from all of that line. And they do create her, and the hardships and the sorrow. She does recognize that she is formed in the crucible of her heartache, as are they all.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's such a great point about Bee and Tiny Mite. Velvet doesn't have the imagination that they do, and actually, that enables them to stay because they have a whole other world that they occupy in the same place. Whereas, Velvet doesn't have that, and you're right; she has to go elsewhere. And that's a really good point.
But yes, it confirms my suspicion,
yeah,
perhaps born of personal experience, that the pretty people and the people who had it easy in high school, that was your heyday.
Yeah, well, and this is it, this whole small town, this whole, yeah, like if you've reached the peak by homecoming,
That's
kids. Tough, you know, like to imagine like life being downhill from 18.
From 18, yeah.
You know, how do you keep, you know, yeah, that would be a tragic thing.
So, yes, if you're awkward enough, the hope is you're awkward and weird in high school, i.e. me.
Yeah, same me
late,
as well. Thank God.
There's a bloomer. Thank goodness.
That there's exactly more out there. Oh, my
exactly.
gosh.
We're still looking towards the future. Thank goodness. Yeah. Things can only go up from here.
Yeah, yeah.
And things are obviously going to go really up for you. I loved this book. I will be shouting about it.
Thank you very much.
It's a wonderful read. And I don't know that we've done it justice, but in that way, I would like to invite people to discover it for themselves. But to sum up, if there's one thing that you want to talk about this book, to say about this book, what has it done for you in the writing of it?
What has it done for me in the writing of it? That's a very good question. I don't know. It's just opened up. I guess what I'm thinking of now is like, now that I have this debut, I've kind of been this secret writer for a long time, you know, like doing it on the side and hoping it'll work out and not, so yeah, so now I'm just excited to say I'm a writer, I'm working on another project, and
you've
it's been outed
as a writer.
Yeah, I have. I'm really, really thankful. I am.
It's physical.
It's given me so much. It is. I'm yeah, the validation of that has been a wonderful experience after just, like I said, working on it for 10 years. You know, I always had like a different section of it in the diaper bag. So, yeah, to just see it here on your table it's kind of surreal. It's exciting.
So you have 4 babies.
Yeah, I do.
And one on the way.
And yeah. And yeah, another one on the way. Yes, yes.
Well, exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.